Fast forward to the end of the decade, I remember my parents coming home one night from having just seen Midnight Cowboy. I asked what they thought of it. My mother walked past me, speechless, and my father didn't say much. It was the first Hollywood film to get an X rating on the big screen, and they thought they were going to see a Western. Speaking of screens, we watched our favorite TV shows on our black and white television. I still remember the day that changed our lives, our first color television. It was in 1966, and the first color TV show that I had to watch was Star Trek. Yay! What a difference it made. I distinctly recall a Friday in November 1963, just after I had started high school. I was in a classroom when we heard students walking through the hallway. One of the students opened our door and informed us that the principal had just announced to the students in study hall that the school was closing because the president had been shot. I pictured President Kennedy speaking at an outdoor stage when it happened. To get home, I had my usual route of walking six long blocks and catching two buses. While I waited for my second bus, I remember seeing a car pull up to a red light with a couple in the front seat. The woman in the front seat was crying. From the moment I got home, the TV set was pretty much on all weekend. That was when I found out the president was dead. I had a hard time accepting Lyndon Johnson as president because John F. Kennedy had been so youthful and full of life. All the major networks had around-the-clock coverage. When the TV coverage showed the alleged assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald, being transferred in Dallas, we all had another shock as we witnessed his murder by Jack Ruby live on TV. I will never forget the funeral procession with John saluting the military and Jackie Kennedy walking stoically in the funeral march alongside Robert Kennedy. The idealism of the beginning of the decade seemed to fade with the escalating war in Vietnam. I remember a newscaster quoting a young boy who was alarmed about fighting the guerrillas in Vietnam because he had just seen King Kong and didn't want to fight one of those things. In the summer of 1966, fresh out of high school, I worked the night shift at our main post office. I started at 5 p.m., and finished when I was told I could go home. I was 17, making over $5 an hour, with a nighttime increase at 6 p.m., sorting mail and packages. I used to dream about zip codes. The year 1969 was the most memorable for me. That summer, I interned in the audit department of the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company in New York City. There were a number of college interns in various departments, and we met weekly to discuss what we were doing. In July, Apollo 11 successfully landed men on the moon for the first time. I remember that Sunday night, along with millions of viewers, as we waited and then watched the ghostly images from the lunar lander when Neil Armstrong jumped down and made the first human footprints on the moon. Later, after they returned home, there was a ticker tape parade in Manhattan for the astronauts. The parade was to go right past the office building where I was working. I remember looking out the office building and staring down below, waiting for the astronauts to pass by. Suddenly, some workers from the other side of the floor came running through to inform us that they had seen the astronauts pass by on the other side of the building. I was in the wrong place at the right time. Which brings me to another incident that summer. I went with my parents to visit my younger brother in upstate New York in August, where he was attending Boy Scout camp. I couldn't help but noticing a lot of hippies in the area. I found a flyer announcing a large rock concert coming up the following weekend in the area. It was the Woodstock concert. The town council decided against permitting the concert in the town of Woodstock, so a farmer in the nearby town of Liberty announced that he was allowing the concert to relocate to his farm. During the week, two female college interns at the same place where I was working invited me and another student working in the audit department to go with them to the Woodstock concert. Being the nerds that we were, we passed on the opportunity. That weekend, I kept hearing reports on the radio about the cars being abandoned on a throughway on the way to the concert as people were desperate to get there. In fact, a lot of people without tickets crashed the concert. Many people camped out in sleeping bags on the grounds of the farm. That Saturday night, rain poured down on the concertgoers who awoke on Sunday to find themselves in puddles and mud. You can see them playing in the mud in the concert film. I heard more about the concert when the two girls came back to work on Monday. No one knew at the time how historic the concert would become. Now I'd like to circle back to the fall of 1960. Everyone in our neighborhood in Queens was excited because someone was coming to speak to us about a candidate for president. A temporary stage was built in Freedom Square next to our library. I was standing in the crowd with my parents when an elderly lady stepped over to the microphone to speak to us. The following may have been part of what she said. I excerpted it from an ad she had that fall. We must not let ourselves become concerned with what particular wave of immigration brought our people here, or on what wave of immigration they will come in the future. We must concern ourselves with our pledge, our oath to welcome them and provide them a home. We must be concerned only with providing them the opportunity to use their talents to the fullest capacity so they may add their culture, their art, their skills, their faith, no matter how humble, to the structure of our nation. And we must build for our children and grandchildren. You see, you need not be concerned with the color of a man's skin. It is the shade of the soul that is important to a democracy. You need not be concerned with how a man worships God, but the degree of faith. If we are to be the spokesmen for the free world, we must begin at home by assuring all our peoples, regardless of religion, race, or national origin, equal opportunity under law and under God. The elderly lady who spoke to us that afternoon was Eleanor Roosevelt. What she said still resonates today. It would really be nice if the hopes and dreams my generation had at the beginning of the 1960s would come to fruition. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Kirk Smith. 4 years ago, I gave the Father's Day sermon here, and I'm sure the congregation wondered why I was picked for the service, since I began my talk by saying how I didn't get along at all well with my father. Now, after Bob asked me to be part of his service, I told him I wasn't into music, since during the Summer of Love. Bob's reply, well, you did listen to the Beatles, didn't you? Oh, I did watch the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. Years earlier, I bought my first 78 record, and strangely, it was called Beatle Bomb. Unfortunately, I sat on it while roughhousing with my brother, thus ending my short stint at pop music culture. Looking back at the 60s, what did I do besides being father to my daughter, Suzanne, staying married to a wife with mental problems, working as a sales engineer, sailing and racing my sailboat, and after traveling to Iran and Lebanon on business, finding how much I enjoy travels to Europe? You may have guessed it, getting involved in politics. A little history from the 50s. When I graduated from the eighth grade, the yearbook only listed the politics of one student, me. I was a rabid Republican. The prophecy was that I would find out that the Democrats weren't so bad after all. At Stanford, I was in the Naval ROTC. So when I graduated in mechanical engineering in April 1960, I became an officer on an admiral staff located on a ship anchored in the middle of San Diego Bay. I think I was the only officer that voted for Kennedy. To raise some hell, I showed a commander who was a member of the John Birch Society a brochure from the radio station KPFK that featured a weekly commentary by Dorothy Healy, chairman of the Southern California Communist Party. When they showed the House Un-American Activities Committee film Operation Abolition, I walked out after the second viewing saying it was fascist propaganda. Then the ACLU showed a movie called Operation Correction and told at the Unitarian Church. Later, when I joined this church and told the minister Rankin that I was having trouble getting my final top secret clearance, he said joining the church wouldn't help it a bit. I walked in two protest marches when the Vietnam War was escalated. I took a streetcar down Market Street full of men heading to the racetrack in Albany. The parade was going in the opposite direction, and many of the men in the streetcar were making comments about all the pinkos marching. It was then strange to get off the streetcar, walk back looking in the windows of those men. My wife and I had my daughter in her stroller during the second march. We were at the end of the march with motorcycle cops right behind us. That afternoon, my parents showed up at our apartment, and Dad was really upset when we told him where we had been. When sales managers from the home office in Pittsburgh rode with me to a sales call, we often discussed politics. One real right-wing manager, Frank Fork, said I could give him my views, and he promised he would keep quiet. After 5 minutes, he yelled out that I was a communist Nazi. So ends my memory of Southern love.